Madog, the son of Maeldud, possessed powers within its boundaries. From Porphyrd to Gwaran and the uplands of Alwisti. And at that time he had a brother, Iorwerth, the son of Mardin, in rank not equal to himself. And Iorwerth had a great sorrow and heaviness because of the honor and power that his brother enjoyed, which he shared not. And he sought his fellows and his foster brothers and took counsel with them what he should do in this matter. And they resolved to dispatch some of their number to go back and seek maintenance for him. Then Madog offered him to become master of the household and to have horses and arms and honor, and to fare like as himself. But Iorwerth refused this. And Iorwerth made an inroad into Logria, slaying the inhabitants and burning houses, and carrying away prisoners. And Madog took counsel with the men of Powys, and they determined to place 100 men in each of the 3 comets of Powys to seek for him. And thus did they, in the plains of Powys, from Abercowick and in Alecum, there, and in Rib, Mulur, and the Winry, 3 best comets of Powys. So he was none the better, he nor his household in Powys, nor in the plains thereof, and spread these men over the plains as far as the most in the tree. Now one of the men who was upon this quest was called Ronnabwy. Ronnabwy, Kvig, Krichov, a man of Maldwy, and Kaldgungvas, a man of Maldwy, and Kinnith came together to the house of Hain Gosh, the son of Cadwyn, the son of Idun. And when they came to the house, they saw an old woman, very black and having an upright gable, whence issued a great smoke, and on entering they found the floor full of puddles and mounds, and it was difficult to stand thereon. So slippery was it, that with the mire of cattle, and where the puddles were, a man might go up to his ankles in water and dirt. And there were boughs of holly spread over the floor, whereof the cattle had browsed the springs. When they came to the hall of the house, they beheld cells full of dust and very gloomy, and on one side an old hag making a fire, and whenever she felt cold she cast a lot full of chaff upon the fire, and raised such a smoke that it was scarcely to be borne as it rose up the nostrils. And on the other side was a yellow calf skin on the floor. Main privilege was it to anyone who should get upon that height. And when they had sat down, they asked the hag, where were all the people of the house? And the hag spoke but muttered, there are, there and on, behold, the people of the house entered. A ruddy, clownish, curly-headed man with burden of faggots on his back, and a pair of slender woman also carrying a bundle. And they barely welcomed the men, and kindled a fire with the ropes. And Norman cooked something and gave them to eat, barley bread and cheese and milk and water. And there arose a storm of wind and rain, so that it was hardly possible to go forth with safety. And being weary with their journey, they laid themselves down and sought to sleep. And when they looked at the couch, it seemed to be made but of little coarse straw full of dust and vermin, with the stews of boughs sticking up there through, and the cattle had eaten all the straw that was placed at the head of the foot, and upon it was stretched an old russet-coloured rug, threadbare and ragged, and a coarse sheet full of slits was upon the rug, and an ill-stuffed pillow and a worn-out cover upon the sheet. And after much suffering from the vermin and from the discomfort of their couch, a heavy sleep fell upon one of his companions. Being able either to sleep or to rest, thought he should suffer less if he went to lie upon the yellow calfskin that was stretched out on the floor. And there he slept. As soon as sleep had come upon his eyes, it seemed to him that he was journeying with his companions across the plain of Hagmund Grove. and he thought that he went towards Riddigross on the Severn. As he journeyed, he heard a mighty noise, the like whereof he had never before. And looking behind him, he beheld a youth with yellow curling hair, and with his beard newly trimmed, mounted on a chestnut horse, whereof the legs were grey from the top of the forelegs and from the bend of the hind legs downwards. And the rider wore a coat of yellow satin sewn with green silk, and on his thigh was a gold-hilted sword with a scabbard of new leather, of Cordova, belted with the skin of the deer, and clasped with gold. And over this was a scarf of yellow satin wrought with green silk, the borders whereof were likewise green, and the green of the caparison of the horse and of his rider was as green as the leaves of the fir tree, and the yellow was as yellow as the blossom of the broom. So fierce was the aspect of the knight that fear seized upon them, and they began to flee, and the knight pursued them, and when the horse breathed forth, the men became distant from him, and when he drew in his breath, they were drawn near to him, even to the horse's chest. And when he had overtaken them, they besought his mercy. "You have it gladly," said he. "Fear naught. Ah, chieftain, since thou hast mercy upon me, let me also tell you who I am. Tell me also who thou art," said one of them. "I will not conceal my lineage from thee. I am Midorc, son of Minno." "Yet not by my name, but by my nickname am I best known. And wilt thou tell us what thy nickname is?" "I will tell you. It is Midorc or Pridium." "Ha, chieftain," said one of them. "Why art thou called this?" "I will tell thee. I was one of the messengers between Arthur and Major, his nephew, at the Battle of Camelot, and I was then a reckless youth. And through my desire for battle, I kindled strife between them and stirred up wrath. And I was sent by Arthur the Emperor to reason with Major and to show that he was his foster father and his uncle, and to seek for peace, lest the sons of the kings of the island of Britain and of the nobles should be slain. And whereas Arthur charged me with his fair sayings he could think of, I uttered into Mordred the harshest I could devise, and therefore I am called Midorc Cor Pridium. And from this did the Battle of Camelot ensue, and 3 nights before the end of the Battle of Camelot I left them. I went to the Leglass in North Britain to do penance, and there I remained, doing penance 7 years, and after that I gained pardon. Then lo, they heard a mighty sound, which was much louder than that which they heard before. And when they looked round towards the sound, they beheld a ruddy youth, without beard or whiskers, noble of mien, and mounted on a stately courser. And from the shoulders and the front of the knees downwards, the horse was bay, and upon the man was a dress of red satin wrought with yellow silk, and yellow with the borders of his scarf. And such parts of his apparel and of the trappings of his horse as were yellow, as yellow were they as the blossom of the broom. And such as were red were as ruddy as the richest blood in the world. Then behold, the horseman overtook them, and he asked of Midorc a share of the little men that were with him. "That which is fitting for me to grant, I will grant, and thou shalt be a companion to them as I have been." And the horseman went away. "Midorc," inquired one of we, "who was that horseman?" "Ravan Peri, the son of Prince Dordach." And they journeyed over the plain of Agria Grove, as far as the ford of Riddigross on the Severn, and for a mile around the ford on both sides of the road they saw tents and encampments, and there was the clamour of a mighty host. And they came to the edge of the ford, and there they beheld Arthur, sitting on a flat island below the ford, having Benwyn the bishop on one side, and Gwarfa, the son of Cor, on the other, and a tall oval man with a silver side, with a sheathed sword in his hand, clad in a coat and cap of jet black satin. good, said Arthur. And where at all didst thou find these little men? I found them, Lord, up yonder on the road. Then the Emperor smiled. Lord, said the dog, wherefore dost thou laugh? Hey, dog, replied Arthur, laugh not, but it pitieth me that men of such stature as these should have this island in their keeping, after the men that guarded it of yore. Then said the dog, one of we, dost thou see the ring with stone set in it, that is upon the Emperor's hand? I see it, he answered. It is one of the properties of that stone to enable thee to remember that thou seest here tonight. Hast thou not seen the stone, thou wouldst never have been able to remember what's thereof. After this they saw a troop coming towards the ford. Hiddork inquired one of we, to whom does yonder troop belong? They are the fellows of Rivan Pele, the son of Prince Dortra. These men are honourably served with mead and bread, and are freely beloved by the daughters of the kings of the island of Britain. And this they merit, for they were ever in front, on the rear in every pelle, and saw but one hue upon the men, and the horses of this troop. For they were all as red as blood, and when one of the knights rode forth from the troop, he looked like a pillar of fire glancing toward the sky, his troop encamped above the ford. Then they beheld another troop coming towards the ford, and these from their horses' chests upwards were whiter than the lily, and below blacker than jet. And they saw one of these knights go before the rest and spur his horse into the ford in such a manner that the water dashed over Arthur and the bishop and those holding counsel with them, so that they were as wet as if they had been drenched in the river. And as he turned the head of the horse, the youth who stood before Arthur struck the horse over the nostrils with a sheathed sword, so that had it been with the bare blade, it would have been a marvel if the bone had not been wounded as well as the flesh. And the knight drew his sword half out of the scabbard and asked of him, wherefore dost thou strike my horse? Whether was it an insult or in counsel unto me? Thou dost indeed lack counsel. What madness caused thee to ride so furiously as to dash the water of the ford over Arthur and the consecrated bishop and their counsellors, so that they were as wet as if they had been dragged out the river? His counsel then will I take. So he turned his horse head around towards his army. Idork, said Ronagui, who was yonder knight? The most eloquent and the wisest youth that is in this island, and Owen, the son of Taliesin. Who was the man that struck the horse? A youth of forward nature, Elphin, the son of Gwydno. Then spake a tall and stately man of noble flowing speech, saying that it was a marvel that so vast a host should be assembled in so narrow a space, and that it was still a greater marvel that those should be there at that time who had promised to be by midday in the Battle of Baden, fighting with Osla Gulavadar. Whoever thou mayest choose to proceed or not, I will proceed. Thou sayest well, says Arthur. And we will go together, Hiddork, said Ronagui. Who is the man who spoke so marvellously unto Arthur as you are? A man who may speak as boldly as he listened. Caradoc Vichfras, the son of Lear Marie, as chief counsellor in his cousin. Then Hiddork took Ronagui behind him on his horse, and that mighty host moved forward, each troop in its order towards Kevin Carl. And when they came to the middle of the ford of the Severn, Idor turned his horse's head, and Ronagui looked along the valley of the Severn. And he beheld two fair troops coming towards the ford. One troop there came of brilliant white, whereof every one of the men held a scarf of white satin with jet black borders, and the knees and the tops of the shoulders of their horses were jet black, though they were pure white in every other part, and their banners were pure white with black points to them all. Hiddork, said Ronagui, who are yonder pure white troop? They are men of Norway, March, the son of Mirtrian, is their prince, and he is cousin unto Arthur. And further on he saw a troop whereof every man wore garments of jet black, with borders of pure white to every scarf, and the tops of the shoulders and the knees of the horses were pure white, and their banners were jet black with pure white at the point of each. Hiddork, said Ronagui, who are the jet black troop yonder? They are the men of Denmark, and Hidde, son of Nod, is their prince. army of mighty ones dismounted below Caer Badon, and you perceive that he and Ador journeyed the same road as Arthur. And after they had dismounted, he heard a great tumult and confusion amongst the host, and such as were then of the flanks turned to the centre, and such as had been in the centre moved to the flanks. And then behold, he saw a knight coming, clad both he and his horse in mail, of which the rings were whiter than the whitest lily, and the rivets redder than the ruddiest blood, and he rode amongst the host. Idawg, said Ronwy, will yonder host flee? King Arthur never fled, and if this discourse of thine were heard, thou wert a lost man. But as to the knight whom thou seest yonder, it is Kai. The fairest horseman is Kai in all Arthur's court. Men who were at the front of the army hastened to the rear to see Kai ride, and the men were at the centre and flew to the side. And he shackled his horse, and this is the cause of all confusion of the host. Thereupon they heard a call made for Cawdor, Earl of Cornwall. And behold, he arose with the sword of Arthur in his hand, and the similitude of two serpents was upon the sword in gold, and when the sword was drawn from its scabbard, it seemed as if two flames of fire burst forth from the jaws of the serpents, and then so wonderful was the sword that it was hard for anyone to look upon it. And the host became still, and the tumult ceased, and the earl returned to the tent. Idawg, said Ronwy, who is the man who bore the sword of Arthur? Cawdor, Earl of Cornwall, whose duty it is to arm the king on the days of battle and warfare. And they heard a call made from Arinric and Abai, Arthur's servant, a red, rough, ill-favoured man, having red whiskers with bristly hairs. And behold, he came upon a tall red horse with the mane parted on each side. And he brought with him a large and beautiful sumpa pack, and the huge red youth dismounted before Arthur, and he drew a golden chair out of the pack, and a carpet of diapered satin. And he spread the carpet before Arthur, and there was an apple of ruddy gold at each corner thereof. And he placed the chair upon the carpet, and so large was the chair that three armed warriors might have sat therein. Gwen was the name of the carpet, and it was one of its properties that whoever was upon it, no one could see him, and he could see everyone, and it would retain no colour but its own. And Arthur sat within the carpet, and Owain, the son of Orion, was standing before him. Owain, said Arthur, wilt thou play chess? I will, Lord, said Owain. And the red youth brought the chess for Arthur and Owain, golden pieces and a board of silver, and they began to play. And while they were thus, and when they were best amused with their game, behold, they saw a white tent with a red canopy, and the figure of a jet-black serpent on the top of the tent, and red glaring venomous eyes in the head of the serpent, and a red flaming tongue. And there came a young page with yellow curling hair and blue eyes, and a newly springing beard, wearing a coat and surcoat of yellow satin, and hose of thin greenish yellow upon his feet, and over his horse shoes of parti-coloured leather, fastened at the insteps with golden clasps. And he bore a heavy three-edged sword with golden hilt, and a scabbard of black leather tipped with fine gold. And here he came to the place where the Emperor and Owain were playing at chess. And the youth saluted Owain, and Owain marvelled that the youth should salute him, and should not have saluted the Emperor Arthur. And Arthur knew what was in Owain's thought, and he said to Owain, marvel not that the youth salutes thee now, for he saluted me erewhile, and it is unto thee that his errand is. Then said the youth unto Owain, Lord, is it with thy leave that the young pages and attendants of the Emperor harass and torment and worry the ravens? And if it be not with thy leave, cause the Emperor to forbid them. Lord, said Owain, thou hearest that the youth says, if it is good to thee, forbid them from my ravens. Play the game, said he. And the youth returned to the tent. That game did they finish, and another they began. And when they were in the midst of the game, behold, a ruddy young man with auburn curling hair and large eyes, well grown and having his beard new shorn, came forth from a bright yellow tent, upon the summit of which was the figure of a bright red lion. And he was clad in a coat of yellow satin, falling as low as the small of his leg, and embroidered with threads of red silk. and on his feet were those of white fine buckram, and buckskins of black leather were over his hose, whereupon the golden clasps, and in his hand the huge heavy three-edged sword with a scabbard of red deer hide, tipped with gold. And he came to the place where Arthur and Owain were playing at chess, and he saluted him, and Owain was troubled at the salutation, but Arthur minded it no more than before, and the youth said unto Owain, "Is it not against thy will that the attendants of the emperor harass thy ravens, killing some and worrying others? If against thy will it be, beseech him to forbid them." "Lord," said Owain, "forbid thy men. If it seem good to thee, play thy games," said the emperor, and the youth returned to the tent. And that game was ended and another begun, and as they were beginning the first meal of the game, they beheld the small distance from them a tent speckled yellow, the largest ever seen, and the figure of an eagle of gold upon it, and a precious stone of the eagle's head. Coming out of the tent, they saw a youth with thick yellow hair upon his head, fair and comely, and a scarf of blue satin upon him, and a brooch of gold, and a scarf upon his right shoulder, as large as the warrior's middle finger. And upon his feet were those hose of fine topness, and shoes of particular leather clasped with gold, and the youth was of noble bearing, fair of face, with ruddy cheeks, large hawk's eyes. In the hand of the youth was a mighty lance speckled yellow, with a newly sharpened head, and upon the lance a banner displayed. Fiercely angry and with rapid pace came the youth to the place where Arthur was playing at chess with Owain, and they perceived that he was wroth, and thereupon he saluted Owain and told him that his ravens had been killed, the chief part of them, and that such of them as were not slain were so wounded and bruised that none of them raise his wings and fill them a single fathom above the earth. "Lord," said Owain, "forbid thy men." "Play," said he, "if it please thee." Then said Owain to the youth, "Go back, and wherever thou foundest the strife at the thickest, come lift up the banner, and let come what pleases heaven." So the youth returned back to the place where the strife bore hardest upon the ravens, and he lifted up the banner, and as he did so they all rose up in the air, wrathful and fierce and high of spirit, clapping their wings in the wind, and shaking off the weariness that was upon them, and recovering their energy and courage, furiously and with exultation did they, with one sweep, descend upon the heads of the men who had erewhile caused them anger and pain and damage. And they seized some by the heads, and others by the eyes, and some by the ears, and others by the arms, and carried them up into the air. And in the air there was a mighty tumult with the flapping of wings of the triumphant ravens, and with thy croaking there was another mighty tumult, the groaning of the men that were being torn and wounded, and some of whom were slain. And Arthur and Owain marvelled at the tumult as they played at chess, and looking they perceived a knight upon a dun-coloured horse coming towards them, and marvellous was the hue of the dun horse, bright red was his right shoulder, and from the top of his legs to the centre of his hoof was bright yellow. Both the knight and his horse were fully equipped with heavy foreign armour. The clothing of the horse from the front opening upwards was bright red seven, and from thenceforth opening downwards was bright yellow in the centre. A large gold-hilted one-edged sword had the youth upon his thigh, and a scabbard of light blue and tipped with Spanish Latin. The belt of the sword was of dark green leather with golden sides and a clasp of ivory upon it, and a buckle of jet black upon the clasp. A helmet of gold was on the head of the knight, set with precious stones of fine virtue, and on the top of the helmet was the image of a flame-coloured leopard, with two ruby stones in its head, so that it was astounding for a warrior, however stout his heart, to look at the face of the leopard, much more than at the face of the knight. He had in his hand a blue-shafted lance, but from the heft to the point it was stained crimson-red with the blood of the ravens and their plumage. The knight came to the place where Arthur and Owain were seated at chess, and they perceived that he was harassed and vexed and weary as he came towards them. And the youth saluted Arthur and told him that the ravens of Owain were slaying his young men and attendants. And Arthur looked at Owain and said, "Forbid thy ravens." "Lord," answered Owain, "play thy game." And they played, and the knight returned back towards the strife, and the ravens were not forbidden any more than before. And when they had played a while, they heard a mighty tumult, and a wailing of men, and a croaking of ravens. And as they carried the men in their strength into the air, and tearing them betwixt them, let them fall piecemeal to the earth. and during the tumult they saw a knight coming towards them on a light grey horse, and the left foreleg of the horse was jet black to the centre of his hoof, and the knight and the horse were fully accoutred, with huge heavy blue armour and a robe of honour, yellow, like satin upon the knight, and the borders of the robe were blue, and the housings of the horse were jet black, with borders of bright yellow. And on the thigh of the youth was a sword, long and three-edged and heavy, and the scabbard was of red-cut leather, and the belt of new red deerskin, having upon it many slides and a buckle of the bone on the seahorse, the tongue of which was jet-black. A golden helmet was upon the head of the knight, wherein set were sapphire stones of great virtue, and at the top of the helmet was the figure of a flame-coloured lion, with a fiery red tongue, issuing above a foot from his mouth, and with venomous eyes crimson red in his head. And the knight came bearing in his hand a thick ashen lance, the head whereof, which had been newly steeped in blood, was overlain with silver. And the youth saluted the emperor. "Lord," said he, "carest thou not for the slaying of thy pages and thy young men and the sons of the nobles of the island of Britain, whereby it will be difficult to defend this island from henceforth forever?" "Away," said Arthur. "Forbid thy ravens. Play this game, Lord," said Owain. So they finished the game and began another. And as they were finishing that game, lo, they heard a great tumult and a clamour of armed men and a croaking of ravens and a flapping of wings in the air as they flung down the armour entire to the ground. And the men and the pieces, and the men and the horses piecemeal. And then they saw coming a knight on a lofty-headed piebald horse, and the left shoulder of the horse was of bright red, and its right leg from the chest to the hollow of the hoof was pure white, and the knight and the horse were equipped with the arms of speckled yellow, variegated with Spanish Latin, and there was a robe of honour upon him, and upon his horse divided in two parts white and black, and the borders of the robe of honour were of golden purple, and above the robe he wore a sword, three-edged and bright, with a golden hilt, and the belt of the sword was of yellow gold work, having a clasp upon it of the eyelids of a black seahorse, and a tongue of yellow gold to clasp. Upon the head of the knight was a bright helmet of yellow latten, with sparkling stones of crystal in it. And at the crest of the helmet was the figure of a griffin, with a stone of many virtues in its head. And he had an ashen spear in his hand with a round shaft, coloured with azure blue. And the head of the spear was newly stained with blood, and was overlaid with fine silver. Wrathfully came the knight to the place where Arthur was, and he told him that the ravens had slain his household, and the sons of the chief men of his island, and he besought him to cause Owain to forbid his ravens, and Arthur besought Owain to forbid them. Then Arthur took the golden chessmen who were upon the board, and crushed them until they became as dust. Then Owain ordered Gres, the son of Reged, to lower his banner, so it was lowered, and all was peace. Then Ronwy inquired of Iddawc, who were the first three men that came to Owain to tell him his ravens were being slain? Said Iddawc, they were the men who grieved that Owain should suffer loss, his fellow chieftains and companions, Selyb the son of Cynan, Garwin of Powys, and Gwygarr, and Gled of Rhod, and Rhys, the son of Regred, he who bears the banner in the day of battle this tribe. Who, said Ronwy, were the last three men who came to Arthur? And told him that the ravens were slaughtering his men. The best of men, said Iddawc, and the bravest, and who would grieve exceedingly that Arthur should have damage in aught? Blethaeon, the son of Maurith, and Ruavan of Pebbi, the son of Prince Duatach, and Hyvain of Unwen. And with that, behold, 24 knights came from Oslo, Gwylev Lwar, and grave a truce of Arthur for a fortnight and a month. And Arthur rose and went to take counsel, and he came to where a tall, auburn, curly-haired man was a little way off. And there he assembled his counsellors, Bedwini the bishop, and Gwarfegid, the son of Cor, and March the son of Mertron, and Cadwrag Ishras, and Calac Mai, the son of Gwar, and Adain, the son of Nod, and Ruvon Pebir, the son of Duotach, and Riagun, the son of the king of Ireland, and Gwen Winwin, the son of Nau, Havel, the son of Emir Lidwar, Gwilym, son of Ath, and Garo Kuste, and Mabon, the son of Mordor, Odrin, and Pedro, Palefo, and Hevaid, Unlem, and Twig, the son of Perith, and Neth, the son of Kadar, and Gobri, the son of Echol, Vodwit, Tilwil, Nerth, the son of Kadar, Gobri, the son of Echol, Vodwitwil, Gwer, the son of Questil, and Godri, the son of Geraint, Tristan, the son of Talon, Talwich, Morain, Menarch, Grenwyn, the son of Leir, Lanchu, the son of Arthur, and Langrovid, Vanna, Cadair, the son of Cormor, Morwen, the son of Tyr, Rhaen, the son of Geraint, and the third son of
forbid a youth who can give counsel so liberal as this from coming to the councils of his lord. Then Kai arose and said, "Whosoever will follow Arthur, let him be with him tonight in Cornwall. And so whosoever will not, let him be opposed to Arthur even during the truce." And through the greatness of the tumult that ensued, Ronabwy awoke. And when he awoke, he was upon the yellow calfskin, having slept 3 nights and 3 days. And this tale is called The Dream of Ronabwy. And this is the reason that no one knows the dream without a book, neither bard nor gifted seer, because of the various colours that were upon the horses, and the many wondrous colours of the arms of the panoply, and the precious scarves, and of the virtue-bearing stones.